from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Welcome into Saturday Suckage. Mark Grody, I guess I say, in for Steve Rosenblum. Shorty show today, up until 12:45. And since I know that this show has evolved to the point where Rosie has this list, this arduous, dare I say, list of people that he reads off to begin every single show, because they all say in their own context something about sucking players and celebrities and Julie Swieka. And so I'm not going to go through that, but I just wanted to honor it. Steve, there you go. I salute you for your really, really long list of people saying that something sucks. But
man, that sucks.
Yes, like that. And Tyler Farengol, our producer today, probably has had to pay very close attention to the ascending list that Steve gives. And who knows, maybe he's gotten it wrong at some point in time. I always look at that as a test for any producer. Like, okay, here's a list of 30 sound bites I want you to play leading into this open. But, you know, I love Stevie Sunshine and always love working with him. You know, I'm sure it will happen again on The Score where he and I are hosting a 3 or 4 hour show together that just pops up out of nowhere. But I actually wanted to begin the show today. Well, I guess I should first tell you that I am Mark Grody, that I am here with you until 12:45 on The Score. That is when Cubs baseball will begin. The Cubs and Mets at 1:20 is when that first pitch will be thrown by Jameson Taillon. Tyler McGill is the man on the mound for the Mets today. The Cubs is definitely where I need to start today. And we've got all sorts of stuff coming up. We've got Bulls talk with Ricky O'Donnell, which I think is going to be pretty important, because Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation hated the trade that the Bulls made yesterday. The Alex Caruso to Oklahoma City for Josh Giddey. We will talk to Ricky in about 20 minutes about his hate for what the Bulls have done. He is definitely a guy who follows the NBA draft. Maybe we'll have time to get into that and some of the other large topics surrounding the Bulls, like Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. But that's all coming up. Cubs lost to the Mets yesterday. 11-1 was the final score. And I'm taking a walk yesterday after that disaster of a game. Unfortunately, Shota Imanaga gets hit up. And I guess the question you have to ask right now about the Cubs, they're 76 games into the season, 36-40. That means there's 86 games to go. That's still a lot of games to go. And the question I was asking myself is this Cubs team capable of getting hot? Of getting hot and rattling off 7 or 8 wins in a row, 15 of 17, to something like win a month. And I know they had a really good start to the season. That almost feels like it didn't happen. Where we were all, remember that point this year where we were like, how's Craig Counsell doing this? And then it's, oh, okay. Yeah, and he wasn't really doing this. But are the Cubs capable of making a run? And right now they are not, because, and I know, duh, you know, especially based on yesterday, I actually took some hope away from the San Francisco series where the Cubs did win 2 out of 3, and they actually scored at least 5 runs in every one of those games. And so, which I know, like, that's kind of a low bar when you think about it, but I was like, I'll take that. I mean, there were many missed opportunities still, but I was like, I'll take that. You were still getting really good starting pitching in all of those games, from including Kyle Hendricks, and Justin Steele was really good as well. So you still had two. You had one component that, oh, you had home runs in each and every one of those games too. That was the other part. Getting to those 5 runs at least, you finally had some slugs, some home runs to be reckoned with. The Ian Happ 3-run homer, even though that's the game that you lost. Happ with the 3-run homer in the 7th, and Hector Neris allows the 3-run bomb to Estrada, and the Cubs end up losing that game on Monday. But there was some things happening where I was like, okay, because if you listen to me, I did say that I thought the Cubs would be blasting off in the summer, like by now. And it's not happening. But there was that small sample where, and maybe I'm projecting and looking too deeply or being too hopeful, that's what I got out of that series, not the horrendous breakdown by Hector Neris. But then, you know, you're like, oh, Keegan Thompson, okay. If you can do that, because everybody's always rooting for Keegan Thompson. He's a Cub, man. Like, come through the system. He and Justin Steele, I thought that there's some parallels there between those guys. Like, I actually thought Keegan Thompson might have been the better of the two at one point in time.
I was going to say, you remember that time? It was the 2021 season. You could sense that there was going to be some unloading being done. Remember when Keegan Thompson was a legit consideration as a rotation pitcher?
Oh, absolutely. And because I think I was a little ignorant about Justin Steele, I actually thought that Keegan Thompson was going to be the shinier of the two. And so far, it hasn't worked out that way. But hey, man, I'm all for the reclamation. And that's kind of what it feels like for Keegan Thompson in his career right now, just because it seemed to peak and then be on the way down because of injuries. And now you see something like that, what he did on Tuesday, that's pretty cool. But I'm getting a little bit away from where I was wanting to go, and that is, yeah, I started to see a glimmer of something in that 3-game series, the starting pitching continuing to be terrific and to be essentially a savior to this season so far. And I saw big home runs for the Cubs finally, and I've been saying this, that even though the Cubs lost that game on Monday, the game against San Francisco, that 3-run jack by Ian Happ in the 7th inning, like, you've been watching these games and kind of been around for the motion of it, that, like, if you were at that game, I bet you felt that. That felt like a huge moment. And the crowd was great, but you could never completely project that unless you are there. So if you were there, I do wonder if it actually did it feel like that, because it felt so big, so much relief, so much, I think, not just the relief of, wow, the Cubs finally hit a clutch home run. We're not talking about, you know, like, it felt like the Cubs were going to win that game. Obviously they did not, but it felt like such a moment of relief and a moment of maybe a little bit of confirmation in, I think, Cubs fans' minds and even mine, where I'm thinking, okay, like, yeah, these guys are good. This is what they should be doing. That's what Ian Happ does. So, yes, of course, that is happening right there. So you get that in your head that's the way it's supposed to be. That game broke down horribly, but those are the glimmers that I took away from it to bring it back to, then you get this effort against the Mets, and then I'm quickly reminded that I probably shouldn't use a three-game series as my sample size at this point. And so my answer is no. This Cubs team is not capable right now of going on some sort of hot streak. And that scares me. And I wonder what you guys think about it as well. 312-644-6767 is the number. Shota Imanaga yesterday, it was rough. It was rough. 3 innings, 10 runs, 3 home runs, 11 hits. His ERA finally is in the twos. His ERA goes from 189 to 296. Just nothing. Like, I don't know how else you could put it other than nothing was working for Shota Imanaga in terms of everything that a pitcher needs. His actual pitches weren't working. The location wasn't good. The velocity was down like a tick in this thing. So everything that could go wrong for a pitcher did go wrong right from the beginning. J.D. Martinez unloading in the first, and Francisco Alvarez with one of two homers in the second. Old Brandon Nimmo with a home run as well, a two-run jack on an 89-mile-per-hour fastball. They were making a point of it during the broadcast, just talking about the velocity being just down a tick, which is certainly not alarming, but, you know, notable, especially when, you know, 89 just feels like wiffle ball speed just in this day and age of baseball with all the high velocities that exist. But I thought one thing that was interesting too about Shota Imanaga is that before the game, I listened to Craig Counsell. I believe it was on Bernstein at Home show. They happened to be playing because they just gotten the audio from Wrigley Field before the game on Friday, and they were just playing it in whole. And there are a couple of things that caught my attention then, and they actually sort of pertain to or are still relevant to what happened yesterday with Shota Imanaga. This first one I want to play for you. Craig Counsell says that, because we're always talking about Shota Imanaga and, you know, doing it here, the innings that are piling up. There's all these caveats. Okay, he did that, but can he do this? Can he struck that team out, but can he strike this team out? And, yeah, I think Craig Counsell was somewhat wise in saying what you're about to hear from him about needing to pass tests.
Shota has passed so many tests. I think we should, like, stop, like, I mean, just to be fair, you know what I mean? Because we can say this for every player, you know, every single day, or every pitcher or whatever. But I think Shota doesn't need to pass any more tests. He's done that.
And I actually agreed with him when he was saying that because, yeah, it gets to a point where we just have to accept that, oh, this guy's good. It doesn't have to be this novelty, you know, 3-page story anymore and everybody doing deep dives and, oh my, where's this coming from? And look at all the fun little neat things he does. Like he's just a character. At some point in time, you got to accept that he's good. And then that yesterday. So I'm not giving up on Shota Imanaga. Like not even close to anything like that. But when you give that up and it's starting to get warm at Wrigley Field, and there seem to be legitimate reasons and seemingly correctable reasons that he went wrong. Of course, you're a little alarmed when you see a guy give up 10 runs who is your ace right now. The only other time this year that it was a little bit scary, and I think still notable even, on May 29th at the Brewers, you know what I'm talking about, where he gives up 7 runs on a couple home runs, 4 1/3, like every Brewer was just on to him that day. And as they were talking about in the broadcast, you know, every ace is entitled to their bad games, to their duds. Everyone has them. It's going to happen. But look, those are notable things. They are. I'm not adding it up to anything, but you just kind of, okay, I'm watching you. you know, got my eye on you just a little bit. Another thing, too, that was interesting in pregame and then maybe still relevant in the postgame and now or pertinent, this question, this back and forth you will hear from the Cubs manager Craig Counsell and reporter Jesse Rogers.
I assume he was kind of looked like four-seam split heavy the first time he faced him. Do you think he changes it up a little bit, though? Throws out some of the other stuff.
Do you want him to make up a pitch, Jesse?
He's got other pitches. He's got other stuff.
You want him to throw a sinker today, Jesse?
Yeah, and I mean, it went on, too, a little bit longer. You know, it is noted that he has talked about that. I've read that. Maybe it was from Jesse that I read it, that Shota Imanaga kind of, you know, winking at reporters with other pitches that he hasn't thrown yet. So I do see where he was going right there, and I don't know, maybe Counsell doesn't – I do get the feeling Counsell doesn't pay a lot of attention to what's going on in the media and what's being said. Everybody does to some degree, but he may just block it out a little bit better than those guys. But yeah, I thought it was interesting to tie those two things together that were interesting in the pregame and then pertinent in the postgame. And you hope that you get something good out of Jameson Taillon today. Cubs and the Mets right here on The Score starting at 12:45. Tyler McGill will be on the mound for the Mets today. He's 2-3 with a 3.52 ERA. 312-644-6767 is our number here. I am Mark Grody. Coming up next on the show, there is, I'm sure many of you who didn't like the Bulls trade, the trade that they just made, was that yesterday? Trading Alex Caruso to Oklahoma City for the 21-year-old guard, Josh Giddey. Ricky O'Donnell is one of those that hated the trade, and so we said, oh, let's invite him to come on The Score and tell us why he hated that trade. Bulls talk coming up next with Ricky O'Donnell. I'm Mark Grody on Saturday Suckage in four. My friend, my co-founder, Steve Rosenblum, on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Giddey dribble drive with a floater. Rimming good.
Oh,
and the
my.
Thunder lead 34-16 at the 8:05 mark second quarter.
Giddey
DeRozan.
Up.
Yep.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, more Giddey up. Now he's ours. That's a highlight from this past November 12, 2023 at the United Center. Josh Giddey, whom the Bulls just acquired in the Alex Caruso trade from Oklahoma City, was playing with the Thunder at the United Center again on November 12th of 2023. I'm going to talk more about that trade here in just a second with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. First, wanted to tell you a simple way to listen to Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkins and Spiegel, and everything The Score has to offer is with the free Odyssey app. Follow 670 The Score on the Odyssey app and take us wherever it is that you may go. Well, yes, the Bulls traded Alex Caruso to Oklahoma City for the 21-year-old guard, Josh Giddey. Giddey, the number 6 overall pick in 2021 of that NBA draft, has had a short good, decent career, I guess you could say, averaging 12.3 points per game this year, playing in 80 games, but came off the bench in the playoffs, kind of fell out of favor there as well. But he is still young. There is still potential. So, Ricky O'Donnell, I bring you in right now from SB Nation, and I ask you, what's not to like about this?
Well, I think where I've ultimately landed on this trade is that I would have found it palatable if the Bulls could have landed a few draft picks along with Josh Giddey in this deal. The fact that they made this trade with the Thunder, the team that owns basically every draft pick in the NBA for the next 7 years, and couldn't even get a protected first, how about at least a couple seconds? I find that to be just a terrible piece of business by Arturis Karnišovas. He gave up the far superior player in Alex Caruso, a player who could fit into basically any team structure in the NBA, who's coming off back-to-back All-NBA or All-Defense seasons, who just hit a career-high 40% of his three-pointers. And it just feels like Arturis made this trade without really negotiating very hard against the Thunder or against the rest of the league. And to me, it's a very disappointing return for Caruso. I love the idea of trading Caruso. I was banging the drum on the fact that the Bulls needed to deal Caruso basically the last three transaction periods. I'm glad they finally did it, but to just get one player and no draft picks, to me, is just already setting this rebuild that may or may not be coming up behind, because they just do not have a surplus of draft picks moving forward.
Well, let me ask you this, Ricky, because I've heard versions of what you're saying as well in terms of the way Arturis Karnišovas negotiates or doesn't negotiate. Can you get in his head and attempt to answer the question of why? Why did he just fall in love with Josh Giddey? Why does he seem to be less detailed and maybe less aggressive in a negotiation?
Yeah, I think he's just pretty lazy. He doesn't work that hard. I mean, what has he ever done in free agency? He basically only signs minimum contracts. In the draft, his draft picks have been a disaster so far. Dalen Terry doesn't even look like an NBA player. Patrick Williams is certainly disappointing for a number four overall pick. He found a pretty good player in Io DeSumo and certainly deserves credit for that. But it just seems like he doesn't really work that hard, is my main takeaway from watching the moves Arturis has made and what he says when he gives his rare media availability. So I think they definitely like Giddey. Giddey is very similar to the type of player Arturis typically covets, which is a player with great positional size, is a 6'8" guard. He has tremendous passing vision, pretty good in the open floor, and he can't shoot. And that's just been a common theme for all of Arturis's picks, really, and a lot of his free agent signings over the years since he came to the Bulls. So I have no doubt that Arturis loves Josh Giddey. When Woj broke the trade, he said, "Josh Giddey with all-star upside," which is certainly something to say after a dude just got played off the floor in the most meaningful games he's ever played in the second round of the playoffs. But I have no doubt that the Bulls like Giddey. I think Giddey has some bankable NBA skills. He's been pretty productive already at 21 years old, which is younger than a lot of these prospects in this upcoming draft next week. So there are some things to like about Giddey, but in general, I'm very skeptical that you can build a good team around Josh Giddey, because he's a very poor run and jump athlete. You have to play him with the ball in his hands because he can't shoot, and that immediately puts certain team building constrictions on you, because he doesn't get to the free throw line. He doesn't really bend the defense as a power athlete. And, you know, if you're going to move forward with him as a big piece of the team, you need a like very particular team structure around him to maximize him to actually be a good team. And the Thunder, who are a great young team, already decided, well, the best version of this team doesn't involve Josh Giddey playing a major role.
So what would that mean, based on what you said and the specialization that might be around Josh Giddey, or how you would build around that, or what it connotes for what you're building? What does Josh Giddey mean for DeMar DeRozan and or Zach LaVine?
Yeah, I just don't see how Giddey can play with DeRozan, because DeRozan needs the ball in his hands. DeRozan's obviously excellent with the ball in his hands. He's a very efficient scorer. He's very patient and deliberate in the half court. and you can't really play DeMar off the ball because he's not a very willing three-point shooter. Well, Giddey, I mean, teams don't even guard him. Like, in the second round, the Mavericks were guarding him with their centers because they knew this guy is not going to even take a wide-open three-pointer, and if he does, he's probably going to miss it. I saw a stat going around that Giddey's only made 18% of his threes when they're guarded. When they're unguarded, which is usually because no one respects his jumper, he can occasionally hit them, but his jump shot's just a big problem. And coming from a Thunder team that just finished number one in the league in three-point percentage, they have the greatest shooting coach of all time, Chip England, who is the architect behind the San Antonio Spurs dynasty in terms of reinventing Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker's jump shots. He's the Thunder shooting coach, and he couldn't make a breakthrough with Giddey. So that gives me some trepidation. He is a good free throw shooter, 80%.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's typically something I look for in terms of long-term shooting projection. But, yeah, I just don't see how Giddey and DeMar play together. And if they do play together, the Bulls are going to be the worst three-point shooting team in the league, especially when you factor in Io's a hesitant three-point shooter. Vooch is a hesitant three-point shooter. Now, ultimately, what I'll say,
Kobe
though,
White.
Is that, you know, the Bulls needed to make some moves here, obviously. I would have preferred a package of draft picks over Giddey or Giddey and draft picks. So I find this to be a disappointing return. But I think that one of the biggest things for the Bulls' future is they got to try to keep their draft pick in 2025, which is top 10 protected, owed to the San Antonio Spurs in the DeRozan deal. And with this trade, there is no doubt to me the Bulls are going to be very, very bad trading Caruso for Giddey. They're about to, you know, they won 39 games last year by basically having the greatest clutch luck in NBA history. They literally had better clutch luck than the 73-win Warriors. They won 39 games. I think they are going to be in for a big fall down the standings. And ultimately, that's a good thing for the
team.
Because,
yes.
Yeah. When you talk about what the Bulls need, do they need shooting? Do they need rim protection? Do they need a... Yes, they need all these things. But more than anything, the Bulls need a star, a superstar, if they're ever going to build this thing back up. And keeping your 2025 draft pick is the best way to do it.
Yeah, they need a star, and they need to you know, turn things around for sure. But I am with you. I am, like, when this news hit, I wasn't so angry about the fact that they didn't get a draft pick from Oklahoma City, because I was so happy and maybe even a little bit blinded that, okay, they're doing something. They have realized, they have truly conceded this core now, is what it connoted to me. I know that Arturas Karnišovas said it to everybody at the end of the season, but we finally saw some action. And then the fact that you confirm your opinion that the bottom is going to fall out to some degree. And I think that that is refreshing, because again, with the Bulls and the White Sox, with Jerry Reinsdorf's teams, we just don't see that a lot. So I was willing to kind of settle for the minimum and see where this thing goes. Ricky, do you give them any credit for actually finally starting to do something?
Totally. But I'm not fully convinced that they are going to be all in on a rebuild. I'm not sure that Arturas really wants to be very bad. And what this comes down to is what they do with DeRozan, because DeRozan is the floor of the team. I mean, he's still a very good player, even as he gets ready to turn 35 years old. He's a free agent. If they re-sign him, I think the team is going to be, you know, marginally competitive. They'll probably finish 11th or 12th in the East instead of 14th or 15th. And I'm fascinated to see what they're going to do there. Like, all the reporting is that they want to re-sign DeMar. I think DeMar and Giddey together on the court, that just, like, doesn't really work to me, because you're not going to have enough shooting or enough spacing. And if they move on from DeMar, you know, they're going to be terrible. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there. To this point, the reporting has been the Bulls want to re-sign DeMar, but only want it for 2 years, not 3 years, and that they want to trade LaVine. Well, you're going to trade, if you do trade LaVine, you're not going to get much back for him. His trade value is at an all-time low. Arturas seems desperate just to get rid of him. So, you know, you want John Collins and Jordan Clarkson back from Utah. To me, that sort of seems like the most likely deal at this point. And it really just comes back to DeMar. If they re-sign DeMar, this isn't a true rebuild, because he's 35. He's still really good. He's going to give you some semblance of competitiveness. If they move on from DeMar, it's on. And then you could go to YouTube and type in Cooper Flagg highlights and pin your hopes and dreams on an 18-year-old from Duke because, you know, the Bulls would be playing for the 2025 lottery at that point.
Yes, yes. He's the next guy. He's the next guy. You'll be hearing that name more and more. As long as we're landing on draft, and I know that you study the draft closely, I'll actually be doing a co-hosting a draft show with the great Chuck Swirsky out at the Advocate Center the night of the draft next week. The Bulls, Ricky, have the number 11 pick. Can you give us some potential names and what the Bulls might be thinking with number 11 overall next week?
Yeah, obviously, if you've heard anything about this draft, you've heard that it's not very good, in that right. Drafts are typically defined by the talent at the top. And there's no obvious number one player in this class, which is why it's being said a bad draft. Well, I think the Bulls are in a pretty good spot at number 11 to get somebody who falls, potentially a higher upside player. And for me, the Bulls need the guy who can, you know, have the highest long-term ceiling for them. Like, I'm not necessarily concerned about their ability to impact the team next year. Like, they need someone who has some real potential moving forward. So a couple names I like. I really love Ron Holland, 18-year-old guard or 18-year-old wing from the G League Ignite coming out of Dallas. He was said to be the number one prospect in this class a year ago, had a tough year going against pros in the G League, but I like his athleticism, his positional size, his slashing, and especially his defensive motor. The guy just never stops hustling, makes plays all over the floor. So I really like Ron Holland. I wrote a long feature on him at SBNation.com that you can check out. The other guy I really like for the Bulls that they've been connected to is Devin Carter, who is a little older, 22-year-old junior guard out of Providence. But this guy is just bubbling with athleticism. The 6'3" guard had 26 dunks this season, which is pretty phenomenal. By the way, Josh Giddey had 4 dunks as a 6'8" guard last season in the NBA in twice as many games. So I just love Carter's defensive intensity. The fact that he plays so much bigger than his size, despite being 6'2". He took a star leap as a junior by really improving his three-point shot. Went from like a 29% three-point shooter to a 38% three-point shooter by doubling his number of attempts as well. Can hit tough pull-ups, can shoot off the ball, is a floor spacer, and he's just a monster defensively. Like, if you want a Caruso replacement with a little bit more long-term shooting skill, I think Devin Carter is a good bet for that. It would be easy to say he doesn't have a ton of long-term upside just because he's a little bit older and he's still a rookie. But, of course, you would have said the same thing about Jalen Brunson coming out of Villanova. That's a pie-in-the-sky comparison for Devin Carter or for any player, because I think Brunson really exceeded expectations. But I just love his bankable defensive intensity, his athleticism, and, you know, his improving three-point shot. So if he's on the board for the Bulls at 11, I like Ron Holland and I like Devin Carter.
Well, that's a good capitalization of what the Bulls might be thinking at number 11. I'll be interested to see if it's a busy night trade-wise, or if the Bulls make some more splashes. And I want it, because you and I kind of began this conversation talking about, you know, Arturas Karnišovas, and you saying, you know, I think you said that he's been lazy, and I'm trying to get into his psychology too, on the whys of the way he does business, because, you know, you and other our own Cody Westerlund saying the same thing, that his negotiations and working on the fringes just doesn't seem to be very sound. I just wonder how damaged he still is from the core that looked like it might work, the Lonzo Ball, Vooch, LaVine, DeRozan, and they had that great one half of a season where it looked like this might actually work, and he was celebrated, Arturas, to some degree, and the whole thing has kind of slowly crashed and burned, and finally the bottom is dropping out. How much do you, I don't know if sympathize is the right word, or look at that and say, yeah, he did have something good going, and some of that was out of his control?
Yeah, you can make excuses for him, but at the end of the day, I mean, this has been the Bulls' reality for years, and Arturas has done nothing to change, you know, his spot in life. And if he was pinning his hopes and dreams on Alonzo coming back, well, that was just stupid, and that was never going to happen. So he should have done something at the trade deadline last year. He should have moved off Caruso and DeRozan and tried to get all the future assets he could. He didn't do that. He could have done that 2 years ago even and chose not to. So I think Arturas really wants to tell his bosses, ownership, hey, I made the playoffs. Mm. Well, dude, getting the 8th seed in the East is like the most pathetic accomplishment possible. Like, the East stinks. It's been stinky since Jordan retired. And that is obviously his goal. Like, if the play-in tournament didn't exist, Arturas would have had no chance to make the playoffs the last couple seasons. Instead, he makes the play-in tournament, ultimately gets embarrassed in the second game, 2 seasons in a row. And I just think his goals are just totally out of line. Like, he wants to hold a victory parade from getting the 8th seed in the East. And like that, even if you were to accomplish that, that is pathetic. And the fact that he couldn't even accomplish that just tells you all you need to know about his ability as a front office executive. So I was really banging the drum on the fire Garpax train back in the day. At this point, I mean, Arturas is not even close to as good as Paxson. Paxson had way more hits than Arturas did. And I would even say he's worse than Gar Forman at this point. So I want to see what he can do. I mean, Gar Forman drafted Jimmy Butler. So
that's true.
You know,
let's
see Arturas do something like that. So at this point, I think the Bulls are basically hopeless. However, they were smart to pivot to the rebuild now, even if it's delayed, even if they left a lot of assets on the table by waiting so long and chasing the 8th seed to do it. And I think this is going to be a rough year for the Bulls, is my guess. But the 2025 draft is really good. If the Bulls can keep their pick there, maybe they can get a little lottery luck. That's the best long-term hope for the franchise. And someone like Giddey, even though I don't really like him because he can't shoot and he's not athletic, and he's not a great defensive player, he has been productive on just like a statistical level at a very young age in the NBA. And he has great positional size. He has great passing. So you could talk yourself into it a little bit. I don't love the move, but you know, the Bulls still need star power. Josh Giddey maybe could be a solid player for him. He's not going to be the next face of the franchise, the next star moving forward. And the Bulls got to find that guy. And that should be Arturas's, you know, main focus over the next 12 months.
Ricky, great stuff as always, man. I appreciate your knowledge and your passion, and I'm sure we'll talk to you after the draft, my friend. Take care.
Thanks.
You got it. That is Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation talking about the Chicago Bulls. When we return, I want to react a little bit on Arturas Karnišovas and exactly where I stand with him. Also, I got a chance last night on my DVR to watch the entire pregame of the Rickwood Field game. And one of the most interesting things, or performers, I should say, on the set, I would like to present to you coming up next. I'm Mark Rohde. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
I love it if the plan is to make sure that you have that 25 draft pick, because that's what kind of deal this feels like. It feels like you're going to take a step back, whether it's done purposely or it's done because of finances, and you are going to hope that this young developmental player can cover up the holes that were exposed, especially in that Dallas series that cost him a rotation, like you said. And if it takes a year to do that and you're not a very good team and you ensure yourself of that 25 draft pick, I'm okay with it if that's the plan.
Let's get back to more Mark Rohde on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I think we're all right, as in we are all correct, that the Bulls should have come away from this trade with a draft pick from Oklahoma City, because they are rich in that regard. How could you not? How could you not? I totally and completely agree with that. You know, I also think that the kind of conglomerated, aggregated, official AI opinion on the player, too, in Josh Giddey, is that, yeah, he's young. He might be good. He's probably not a guy that you build around or win because of. Like, this is not a game changer piece, but not a horrible piece. And maybe he turns into something. It's just too young to fold on him yet. And I think that that's the overriding opinion on both of those things. The question, though, that I would ask everybody is, can you put the mistakes of the past, and I think Arturis Karnišovas's biggest mistake was not pulling the plug earlier, taking too much time to realize that a change had to be made, because he started off pretty promising with the core that he was putting together with Lonzo Ball, with the trade for Vucevic, having Zach LaVine, getting DeMar DeRozan. Things look pretty good, maybe not conventional, and those warts would ultimately shine through, but you know, there was reason to be optimistic and respectful of the work Arturis Karnišovas was doing. And then it wasn't working. I think he, like I said, he waited too long that's his sin of the past, waited too long to break it down and realize what feels like most of us realize, that you should have done this last year, but you didn't. And you didn't make the big moves at the trade deadlines when you had opportunities. You didn't get the draft pick either. But all of that said, it's not realistic to think that they would fire Arturis Karnišovas. I'd get that out of your head. That's absolutely not going to happen. So you're stuck with him. I would also say, just because I think this might make it feel better too, I'd say he deserves a chance to fix it. I mean, shouldn't that be the lifespan of a GM or president of sports operations, in this case basketball, that you do get a chance to, if something breaks down on your watch after you had done some good, don't you get at least one more chance to build it back up, to put forth a plan, project a plan to get out of the trouble, and then if this trouble persists, then you have to take a new direction. So I do think that I'd like to see, like, sit back. I mean, I think that's going to be my attitude. All right, okay, you made this deal. It wasn't good that you didn't get a draft pick, but at least you're starting to do something. We knew Alex Caruso was going to be gone one way or the other. All right, what's next? What is next? And I'm all for a short rebuild or a steep decline for 1 year and then get it right back together. Like, I'm no more interested in seeing the Bulls do an actual teardown rebuild. I mean, God, I'm still suffering my own trauma from the Bulls post Jordan, when it was just this slog to get to 10 wins. Like, imagine that. Imagine watching everything. I'm in my prime, man. I'm in my 20s during the 90s Bulls. You know, I graduated high school in 90, and then to see the bottom fall out and to see the Bulls rebuild and have to endure that was like a walk of shame for Bulls fans too. It was like, man, and you still hoped and you still watched and you got excited about Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry and all this stuff, and it was just a massive embarrassment and just a horrible look for the entire franchise. But so maybe that goes into some of my thinking, but I don't think that is what it would take. I mean, I just want to see what the plan is for Arturis Karnišovas. I'm going to be skeptical, but I'm going to go into it knowing that he's the guy, and maybe he deserves a chance to turn this thing around, even if he waited too long to begin to hit the gas pedal once again. Today, the Cubs continued their series against the Mets from Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage starts at 12:45 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer. For the call, first pitch will be at 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. I did notice, too, at the game yesterday, and I guess this is what happens when your team is getting smoked. The Mets beat the Cubs yesterday 11-1. A lot of Mets fans. I guess it makes sense, though. I actually find it flattering when I hear, especially at Wrigley Field, opposing team's fans there, because it means that they, a lot of people, in this case, a lot of people from New York looked at that as, oh, what a great opportunity that would be to go to the great Wrigley Field in the and see the great city of Chicago, maybe take in a Billy Joel concert or whatever's going on this weekend. Yeah, so although it, I understand if you were there, it's probably annoying, all those Mets fans cheering. But then I was like, oh, that's cool. The New Yorkers want to see our little city here in Chicago. I think that's pretty cool. So, and there's always, like, obviously huge representations usually of Midwestern teams. But I'm always more flattered, like, when you see, like, a San Francisco contingency. And you do. You do see that, where the San, you know, they've got an ocean, you know? What do they need us for? But they do come to Chicago, and they're like, oh, yeah, let's see this cool city and all these great things I've been hearing about. Where's their ocean? Yeah, sorry. Sorry, San Francisco. We don't have an ocean. I have that inferiority complex about the San Francisco Giants. But, yeah, Cubs and Mets today. The Cubs, man, don't we say this every day now? Cubs are so stressful. Every day we have to say, Cubs really need to win today. They really need a victory. So we'll see if Jameson Taillon can give it to the Cubs over Tyler McGill. Pregame coming up at 12:45. And coming up next, you could tell I'm itching to get back to Cubs talk. So we are going to do that. We will bring in Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation next. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I love it if the plan is to make sure that you have that 25 draft pick, because that's what kind of deal this feels like. It feels like you're going to take a step back, whether it's done purposely or it's done because of finances, and you are going to hope that this young developmental player can cover up the holes that were exposed, especially in that Dallas series that cost him a rotation, like you said. And if it takes a year to do that and you're not a very good team and you ensure yourself of that 25 draft pick, I'm okay with it if that's the plan.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I think we're all right, as in we are all correct, that the Bulls should have come away from this trade with a draft pick from Oklahoma City, because they are rich in that regard. How could you not? How could you not? I totally and completely agree with that. I also think that the kind of conglomerated, aggregated official AI opinion on the player too in Josh Giddey is that, yeah, he's young, he might be good, he's probably not a guy that you build around or win because of, like, this is not a game changer piece, but not a horrible piece, and maybe he turns into something. It's just too young to fold on him yet. And I think that that's the overriding opinion on both of those things. The question, though, that I would ask everybody is, can you put the mistakes of the past? And I think Arturas Karnišovas's biggest mistake was not pulling the plug earlier. It's taking too much time to realize that a change had to be made. Because he started off pretty promising with the core that he was putting together with Lonzo Ball, with the trade for Vucevic, having Zach LaVine, getting DeMar DeRozan. Things look pretty good. Maybe not conventional, and those warts would ultimately shine through, but, you know, there was reason to be optimistic and respectful of the work Arturis Karnišovas was doing. And then it wasn't working. I think he, like I said, he waited too long to, that's his sin of the past, waited too long to break it down and realize what feels like most of us realize, that you should have done this last year, but you didn't. And you didn't make the big moves at the trade deadlines when you had opportunities. You didn't get the draft pick either. But all of that said, it's not realistic to think that they would fire Arturis Karnišovas. I'd get that out of your head. That's absolutely not going to happen. So you have, you're stuck with him. I would also say, just because I think this might make it feel better too, I'd say he deserves a chance to fix it. I mean, shouldn't that be the lifespan of a GM or president of sports operations, in this case basketball, that you do get a chance to, if something goes, breaks down on your watch after you had done some good, don't you get at least one more chance to build it back up, to put forth a plan, project a plan to get out of the trouble, and then if this trouble persists, then you have to take a new direction. So I do think that I'd like to see, like, sit back. I mean, I think that's going to be my attitude. All right, okay, you made this deal. It wasn't good that you didn't get a draft pick, but at least you're starting to do something. We knew Alex Caruso was going to be gone one way or the other. All right, what's next? What is next? And I'm all for a short rebuild or a steep decline for 1 year and then get it right back together. Like, I'm no more interested in seeing the Bulls do an actual teardown rebuild. I mean, God, I'm still suffering my own trauma from the Bulls post Jordan, when it was just this slog to get to 10 wins. Like, imagine that. Imagine watching everything. I'm in my prime, man. I'm in my 20s during the 90s Bulls. You know, I graduated high school in 90, and then to see the bottom fall out and to see the Bulls rebuild and have to endure that, that was like a walk of shame for Bulls fans too. It was like, man, and you still hoped and you still watched and you got excited about Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry and all this stuff. And it was just a massive embarrassment and just a horrible look for the entire franchise. But so maybe that goes into some of my thinking, but I don't think that is what it would take. I mean, I just want to see what the plan is for Arturis Karnišovas. I'm going to be skeptical, but I'm going to go into it knowing that he's the guy and maybe he deserves a chance to turn this thing around, even if he waited too long to begin to hit the gas pedal once again. Today, the Cubs continued their series against the Mets from Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage starts at 12:45 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer for the call. First pitch will be at 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. I did notice, too, at the game yesterday, and I guess this is what happens when your team is getting smoked. The Mets beat the Cubs yesterday 11-1. A lot of Mets fans. I guess it makes sense, though. I actually find it flattering when I hear, especially at Wrigley Field, opposing teams' fans there, because it means that a lot of people from New York looked at that as, oh, what a great opportunity that would be to go to the great Wrigley Field and see the great city of Chicago, maybe take in a Billy Joel concert or whatever's going on this weekend. I understand if you were there, it's probably annoying, all those Mets fans cheering. But then I was like, oh, that's cool. the New Yorkers want to see our little city here in Chicago. I think that's pretty cool. So, and there's always, like, obviously huge representations usually of Midwestern teams, but I'm always more flattered, like, when you see, like, a San Francisco contingency, and you do see that, where the San, you know, they've got an ocean, you know, what do they need us for? But they do come to Chicago and they're like, oh yeah, let's see this cool city and all these great things I've been hearing about. Where's their ocean? Yeah, sorry, San Francisco, we don't have an ocean. I have that inferiority complex about the San Francisco Giants. But, yeah, Cubs and Mets today. The Cubs, man, don't we say this every day now? Cubs are so stressful. Every day we have to say, Cubs really need to win today. They really need a victory. So we'll see if Jameson Taillon can give it to the Cubs over Tyler McGill. Pregame coming up at 12:45. And coming up next, you could tell I'm itching to get back to Cubs talk. So we are going to do that. We will bring in Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation next. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.